Welcome to Ryan Talks Tax, a podcast designed to keep you up to date on all the latest developments in Canadian tax and government funding. I'm Jim Day. I'm joined today by Clyde Seymour, principal and leader of Ryan's International Income Tax Practice in Canada. Hi, Clyde.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Good. Yourself?
Doing well.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us today to talk about some of the corporate income tax changes announced in the 2021 Canadian federal budget a few weeks ago. I know you've been extremely busy over the past year working on CEWS and CERS, that's Canada Emergency Wage Subsidy and Canada Emergency Rent Subsidy program claims for many of our clients. So why don't we start there? I think they announced an extension in the budget. What did you think of that?
Yeah, that's correct. They did announce an extension for both the CEWS and the CERS, taking the program now or programs for an additional 4 weeks. So they were slated to end on June 5th, 2021. Now there's an additional four weeks each, ending on September 25th. You know, two interesting, notations, or maybe three. One is that, you know, the level of qualification will continue to reduce, right? That was otherwise forthcoming. But two extra changes that were introduced now as part of the budget. One is that for these extra periods, to the extent that there is a revenue decline of 10% or less, there will not be qualification for the CEWS and the CERS, whereas previously, at least under CEWS 2.0 and 3.0, there would have been. The other change, which was a bit political, was in regards to companies paying executive bonuses. This obviously hit the media and the perception that the CEWS money was being used to pay for bonuses. So what the budget has proposed is for these extra periods, and only for these extra periods, and only in regards to public listed corporations and their executives that are otherwise listed in the annual information form, that to the extent that those executives overall pay for 2021 exceeded 2019, not 2020, but 2019, then that excess is going to preclude you from claiming a CEWS amount up to that excess. So that was a nuance that was added for some political pressure with regards to the CEWS and CERS program.
Do you think that'll work? I mean, do you think that'll really, you know, discourage somebody from, or a company from using the CEWS improperly?
Well, you know, I mean, it's from a money is fungible perspective, you know, once you have otherwise paid your salaries for the individuals and they qualify as eligible remuneration, you've met the test, right? You know, what you use the funds for once you receive that level of rebate or subsidy was never legislated, right? It was the feedback, I think, pushback in terms of the media and perception. And certainly there are going to be companies out there that have done quite well or have been done well enough that executives are being paid. And as a result, now there'll be some trim back on the CEWS. But again, the CEWS claims for these extra four periods are further limited anyway, right? So the amount of benefit that's going to be derived from these programs, CEWS or CERS, moving into these new periods introduced by the budget are going to be significantly reduced.
Interesting. So really probably more a political measure being introduced there than anything substantial as far as the relief program goes.
That's what I certainly think, especially that if you are qualifying for a substantial amount of CEWS under now what I'll call CEWS 4.0 as part of this budget, then unfortunately your business is really not doing well. So I wouldn't suspect that the top executives of a publicly listed company that is not doing very well are going to be receiving excessive bonuses. But nonetheless, the legislation is there and we'll see how it'll unfold.
And I noticed they also introduced a new program sort of along the same lines, the Canada Recovery Hiring Program. And I got to be honest, I mean, the acronyms are getting to be a bit much for me, Clyde. I mean, what are we going to call this one? The CRHP or...
It is the Canada Recovery Hiring Program. It's a good question because...
So how does that fit in?
Yeah, there's been some confusion because some of the announcements has been that this is a program to replace the CEWS, which in part it is, right? However, What's not understood by many is that this program is restricted to Canadian-controlled private corporations predominantly. So your other private or public companies are not going to qualify for this particular program. Okay, the program is there, and you can claim it if you're eligible for it. And to the extent that it is more lucrative than the CEWS, then you'll get that greater amount. You can't double up. But there are limits. So there's a maximum. It's $1,129, you know, per eligible employee per week. Right. But then there are other factors. So your opening factor is 50%. So you're going to start with that 50% threshold. It'll start to decline. It's a program that's going to go from June 6th to November 20th of 2021. We'll see if there's any extensions to it. But, you know, it's really there for smaller companies to rehire and to bring new people on board. And to the extent that you do that, you know, and it results in a higher amount than you otherwise could have been eligible for your CEWS, then you'll get that higher amount.
Right. And just to be clear, it's one or the other, right? You're either CEWS or the hiring program. You cannot have both at the same time.
That is correct. You cannot double up. So you'll get the greater of where there's a qualification under this new program.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, moving on to some of the other tax changes that were announced. I mean, you know, we waited almost 2 years for the budget. Maybe that's why it was so lengthy. There's certainly no shortage of income tax changes to talk about. But what else did you see? I mean, it looked to me like there was a straight up corporate tax cut for certain types of business. Do you want to comment on that?
Certainly. So, I mean, you know, I guess, you know, the $1 million question with a lot of the budgets are, you know, are there any tax increases or decreases? So, you know, let's start with the good news on the decrease. Right? The government is targeting a certain industry, and that industry is the zero emission technology. All right. So clearly this is where the auto industry is going, you know, over a number of years. And this particular program is initiated, you know, basically for 7 years after 2021, and then an additional 3 years with kind of a phase out period. The benefit where you qualify for this program is that for federal, I got to stress, this is simply a federal budget, so it's about federal tax rates, but it will reduce your federal tax rate on this type of income, qualifying income, 50% of current rates. All right. So for example, you know, the standard 15% federal rate, well, that'll drop to 7.5%. All right. So that's obviously very substantial for, you know, industries that otherwise, or for this particular industry, and for those that otherwise sell into this industry and have qualifying revenues for zero emission technology. So that's certainly, you know, an interesting move by the government, right, in regards to, you know, a tax break for these types of companies. On the corresponding side, though, are there tax increases? Now, there's no tax increase to corporate tax rates. But, you know, in the worldwide focus in terms of taxing, you know, certain type of marketing and online sales, Canada is introducing, commencing for 2022, a digital services tax, right? So this is going to evolve, you know, over time. It's pegged at 3% of the qualifying revenues. But before everybody panics that this is going to be all across the board in terms of digital sales, they are following the international initiatives in terms of qualification for companies that have 750 million euro of global sales, and specifically $20 million plus Canadian of Canadian sales. All right. So, you know, this is not going to apply to everybody, but, you know, welcome to kind of the new world in terms of digital sales. Obviously, with COVID, this may actually increase in regards to how businesses otherwise, you know, sell product into Canada. And as a result, the digital services tax will now come into play as an additional, you know, revenue stream for the federal government.
Yeah, and sure, you know, obviously they're looking to generate more revenue. And obviously these big digital service providers are a great target. I thought it was a very interesting measure. I mean, it's not really an income tax, is it? It's kind of like a tax on a very specific type of revenue.
That's correct. So, I mean, the U.S. already has a concept at certain state levels of a gross receipts tax, right? So certainly this is what this is looking to be. Now, we don't have draft legislation, or, you know, it's certainly in the works. We'll see how this evolves, you know, but clearly the tax man, so to speak, is reaching beyond our borders to tax corporations that sell into Canada through electronic means.
Yeah, I mean, it should be interesting. And that's a measure, I think, for 2022, right?
That is correct.
I think they're still doing some consultation as far as exactly what revenue would and would not be taxed. I did find it interesting. It almost looked like Canada was willing to sort of go it alone on that one as well. You know, maybe they got a little bit impatient waiting for the OECD. There we go with the acronyms again, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, and the G20 to kind of reach a consensus on what to do about, you know, these digital enterprises. So I thought it was an interesting move. I guess we'll see how the final provisions look.
Yeah, and the government did note in the federal budget that, you know, they're starting with this foot forward. However, you know, as this kind of regime develops through the OECD, then we'll see what happens in regards to kind of amendment and implementation.
Yeah, it should be very interesting. And along the same lines, it looked like they're forging ahead with some other provisions related to international income taxes. And these also line up with some of the OECD's BEPS actions recommendations. So that's base erosion and profit shifting measures. Do you want to comment on those? I mean, I think I saw there was one on interest deductibility limits.
That's correct. So there's two, you know, main BEPS initiatives that this budget addressed. All right. One was in regards to BEPS action number four. All right. And this was in regards to kind of an overall interest limitation, right, with respect to deductibility. So this layers on top of what already exists from a thin capital perspective in terms of interest limitation. But unlike the thin capital restrictions, which are absolute, if you fall upon a thin capital issue, thin capitalization, then any interest that gets denied is lost forever. Under this particular regime, any interest denied gets to be carried forward, right? So you don't necessarily lose the deduction, you just lose the particular timing if you exceed certain thresholds based on EBITDA. Those thresholds could be as high as 40%. We'll see where all this goes, right? But one of the initiatives was in regards to BEPS 4 with respect to a limitation test in regards to interest. Another was in regards to BEPS action number 2, okay? And this is in regards to what's often called a hybrid mismatch. So the use of hybrid entities on an international scale to achieve, you know, certain levels of benefit, specifically, you know, doubling up on interest deductions in multiple jurisdictions. So these type of structures are being frowned upon. The US had already, you know, initiated their own legislation, and now Canada is coming out with similar. Okay, the concept is, you know, structures that allow for double deductions, but no income inclusion somewhere, right? So to the extent you have these structures or these substructures under Canada or through Canada, allowing for an interest deduction in Canada, this legislation would now deny that deduction in Canada. And furthermore, it can also implicate kind of global financing structures that had relied on the interest income in another jurisdiction that perhaps wasn't taxed to be repatriated back to Canada through exempt surplus and a dividend. It would also catch those types of plays and can make that level of income inclusion in Canada fully includable with no deduction under our exempt surplus regime. So again, you know, interesting to see what's going to come out from that legislation. You know, I'll also mention a third, because transfer pricing always rears its head, right? It's a big BEPS issue. You know, every budget Canada will comment on tightening of transfer pricing regulations. In this particular case, Canada has commented, or it's directed at a particular case, the Cameco case, and CRA lost this case because on a particular section under 247, CRA thought they had the opportunity to recharacterize transactions. And they lost on that overall recharacterization criteria, that the recharacterization that is there is only in line with respect to comparing a current transfer pricing methodology against an alternative. whereas the CRA was looking at it as an ability to recharacterize an entire transaction. So we're waiting to see what all this means. You know, the government, you know, certainly has used terms like fairness and whatnot, and this will continue to be studied, but, you know, we're expecting some level of changes to our transfer pricing regulations, which may give the government some opportunity to certainly recharacterize, you know, substance over form. Again, we're not quite there yet, but I thought the comments in the budget were interesting, and we may be leaning towards that in the future.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too. I mean, fairness is, I guess, a matter of perspective sometimes. And in this case, it seems finance feels that losing the case was not fair in the chemical decision. So, but yeah, definitely something more aggressive than what we've seen in the past. And it'll be interesting to see how far they go with that. I mean, overall, the budget seemed to have a bit of a theme about kind of shifting towards, you know, a tax system that has the taxpayer sort of self-identify or almost disclose its own exposures. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I think the history here or days past in regards to, you know, a viewpoint of a taxpayer saying, you know, let CRA come in and let them do their best to find out what our risks may be. We're not going to be here to tell them. Well, the there's a shift, all right? So the budget is announcing, similar to what already exists in the U.S., uncertain tax position disclosure. So to the extent that, you know, you have under IFRS or under whatever type of gap you're using, had the necessity to record a tax risk or provide for a tax risk, now there's going to be separate disclosure for that on a separate statement filed with the tax return, again, similar to the U.S. There's also going to be accelerated reporting for types of transactions. There's already the necessity to report what's called reportable transactions. So certainly, you know, tax plays that involve, you know, levels of tax shelters that are offered, let's say, to the Canadian public, private citizens or corporate. And now there's going to be accelerated reporting for those types of reportable transactions. But there's also a category of notifiable transactions. All right. So these are transactions that the CRA will publish that they feel are, you know, potentially abusive. All right. Or that maybe they're studying and they want to know more about them. All right. So to the extent that you're involved with a reportable or a notifiable transaction, you're going to have 45 days from a stipulated point in time to report. All right. Failure to report can result in penalty. All right. The legislation also has, you know, expanded the ability for the CRA to compel answers through tax audit. All right, both verbally and or in writing, right? So, you know, we're definitely moving towards, and I think corporations have to be prepared for this, that they need to understand their tax risks, all right? And they have to understand where those tax risks may have to be disclosed, or otherwise they could face penalty, right? And these penalties can be quite large. It could be, you know, up to $100,000 or more, depending on a percentage of the benefit of a failed reported notifiable or reportable transaction. So, you know, understand what you're doing, understand your risk, right? And understand what you need to disclose, all right? Because the, you know, the offset in terms of penalty could certainly be quite high. So certainly get ready, because tax regimes are looking to fill the tax coffers. There's been expenses incurred because of COVID, right? And there'll be certainly less tolerance in regards to aggressive tax planning measures that have not been disclosed.
Yeah, I mean, great point, Clyde. I think those penalties looked very significant. So I think they do plan on putting in these measures with some teeth. Of course, enforcement is always an open question. I did have a question for you. You know, when you talk about reportable versus notifiable transaction, is there a significant difference there? Like, do you have to be careful of sort of crossing a boundary from something you thought was reportable and it's really more of a notifiable transaction? Or, you know, for these purposes, are the rules essentially the same?
It seems like the rules are at least very similar, right? Certainly, there can be more clarification by the Canada Revenue Agency in regards to especially what are notifiable transactions. And you'll have to keep up to date, right? So, you know, really where this is going is that as CRA does its audits, it will detect certain types of planning structures, right? And I suspect they start to disclose what these planning structures are, and they'll start to ask for disclosure on those structures, right? And, you know, disclosure is fine. I mean, there's, it just, it starts to bring to the forefront the proliferation of this type of planning. Certainly, if there's too much, then the CRA may recommend the finance to adjust, you know, and to the, I mean, adjust legislation. You know, and I think it's going to behoove the taxpayer now to ensure that you cross your T's and dot your I's, right? It's not going to be enough to say, I've got this great tax plan and we've got this fantastic legal memo, but we never implemented it, all right? So implementation is going to be key. And the other part that's going to be key is creating substance, that to the extent that you have a worldwide plan, what is your substance to back that plan? It's not just good enough to say, I have a manufacturing distribution center set up in the Far East. What is your presence there? Okay, who is doing the work for you? Do you have employees? All right, is there a level of independence in terms of them running their operations? So, you know, it's going to be important to ensure that you've got the substance there to support your structure. Otherwise, as these types of reportings come out, you know, one, you may be detected, and B, you know, certainly you may challenge, the challenge may be successful if you haven't put in place your structure properly.
Yeah, definitely some ambitious measures. I guess we need to point out there are, you know, a lot of, like, this is the mandatory disclosure requirements. Again, that's something they're looking at for 2022. And a very good chance we might have an election between now and then. Do you think that could perhaps, you know, affect whether or not these measures make it into the legislation? Or do you think whichever government's in power will continue down this path?
I think for some of these, whatever government's in power will continue down the path. All right. Only because I didn't really see these types of measures as being offensive to a political platform of any of the Canadian parties, right? You know, what I think will come out of the next budget, which will be a post, presumably a post-election budget, is that if there is a majority government, whoever may form that government, is that that government's going to have to pay for all this, all right? So certainly expect, I mean, when I pay for this, I mean, obviously, the COVID relief and other, you know, kind of reductions to the Canadian coffers because of COVID. So I definitely expect other types of tax changes, you know, maybe more on the personal side, but certainly some on the corporate side. It's just that that will come in a post-election budget than a pre-election budget.
Yeah, very good points. Yeah. Great insights, Clyde, as always. Thank you for your time today.
Great. Thanks, Jim. Been a pleasure.
That's it for this episode of Ryan Talks Tax. For more information on the changes announced in the 2021 federal budget, check out our website at ryan.com/Canada/news and insights. And let us know what you think about the podcast. You can send your comments, suggestions, or questions to webinars@ryan.com. Thanks for listening.